It's a movie.
That's my fault.
That we watched via a method.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
For host.
Oh, well done.
People.
8-11. Sir, fucking, are you fucking kidding me? 1.
Is that what you got last week?
No, I got like a 3 last week.
Somebody got a 1.
All right, let me see if I hit it again. What do I get?
Oh, you rolled a 1.
13. I would have got a 13.
Rolled a 1 when we played the Penny Arcade board game with the weird name.
Jeez. Would have, but didn't. Woulda, coulda, shoulda.
I, man, but beginner's luck is later curse.
It's not a useful aphorism, beginner's luck. Welcome to the Escort Mission. I am Charles. Mike, how you doing this weekend?
I'm pretty pissed right now, actually.
Normally it's a weekend, but it's not.
Not too happy about things.
You're mad at random chance. Josh, how about you?
Hey, I'm the one that's allowed to have the attitude tonight, remember?
Yeah.
Fuck
Josh,
you.
Josh came in with a head of steam earlier today.
Yeah, and he's still steaming. Oh, man, you can see the steam coming out.
You cook your pizza wrong.
Oh, God.
What would happen if cardboard were in the oven?
Everything you know is wrong.
License plates.
Xbox Live. Hairless kittens. What's up with that?
So welcome to the show. We are going to talk about Indie Game the Movie, which we just all watched, and we are going to talk about what we did this week, which I'm sure was many things. We are also a couple days later than normal because speak for myself that we're a couple days later than normal.
I did not do many things. No, I
you
speak
did
late.
Things.
I am a delayed talker. That's what I am. So subtract 5 seconds every time I say anything.
We'll just edit that out, right?
Yeah.
No.
Nope. But before we get into it, please visit us on the interwebs at theescortmission.com.
Your noodles.
Email us. Send us tweets and links. And click through our Amazon link and buy stuff because it's helpful. And one of these days, we're going to do something with all that sweet, sweet Amazon money.
Oh, God. Have you been thinking about what we're going to buy?
I think pop screens. Honestly, I think we pop a lot.
I think we have enough to buy, like, you know, cheap pop screens by now.
We should do it.
I thought we were going to buy mobile shit.
We should buy mobile shit, too. Yeah.
We should do that. But we need more money. We need more money, listeners.
So
stop
Josh,
being so stingy.
How's life?
Dude, I can upgrade my elevators for maximum expediency. I hate tiny tower warnings. Man.
And yet you can't put it down.
Why do you even play that game?
Yeah, that game is so boring.
I don't know. It's something to click on.
It's something to click on.
When I'm not doing anything else for 30 seconds.
No, thank you.
Yeah, and it's not really a game. It's just a thing you click.
You clicking that thing.
I've got like a lot of real life stuff, so I have barely any time for games. It's disappointing. I'm like moving imminently. And I'm buying a car imminently. For some reason, I had to do that at the same time. And I'm studying for a test for a certification for work.
Law school.
Too, all the same time.
But wait. What kind of car are you thinking about?
No. Wait. Go back to the car.
Yeah, this is important.
I'm going to get a Honda Fit.
One with the wheels?
Sweet. Yeah. Fit's sweet. A good car.
That's what I'd get.
I wanted those. I've actually wanted that
those are good.
For a while.
Yeah, John. You know, John, he's got a Fit. He likes it.
You want a Fit?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you want a Fit?
Quite a bit. So much that I'm trying to convince Jessica to buy one.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
When she gets rid of her
desire,
car.
Will not quit.
Why?
Because I mean, it's a cool car.
What does she drive?
She drives a Jetta. I have a Passat.
She's got the crayon.
She should get
it. I have the huge dad mobile, and she doesn't like. Only one of us needs a car that big, and I just happened to be buying a car at the time when we were going to have a child, and so I ended up with a huge car. But I really like small cars.
I didn't realize that you both have VWs. You're like a big VW family.
Yeah.
Would you go back to that car you had before, the sporty one?
Oh, my fucking God. Like,
is that
I basically orgasmed right when you said, like, when you made the thought of my Honda S2000 come into my brain.
So, yes, then?
Oh, God. That was the best car I ever, 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 ever drove.
So, Honda's like, all right.
But how do you really
Honda's
right,
that fucking
car.
Awesome.
They're not right
astonishing that they
right?
can sell. It's astonishing that they can sell that car for... So, I've owned 2 Hondas. They can sell the S2000 for less than like 50 grand is amazing. The level of technology and engineering that went into that car. Highest specific output of any production vehicle for a long time, that was true. And it got eclipsed by like some Ferrari or something.
What year did they stop making it?
2010, 2009.
Are they replacing it in their lineup, or are they ever going to return to that?
They'll probably do another sports car at some point. Yeah,
maybe. Nothing right now. Yeah.
Four cylinders, 2 liters, 240 horsepower, 120 horsepower per liter. That's astonishing without a turbocharger. It's like amazing.
So it's got wheels, right?
Yeah.
Like in an engine?
That means it goes.
I'm not really... Yeah. Yeah.
Mike, that means it goes.
Does it go good? It goes good, right?
It goes good.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's good.
Like better than other things don't go.
Yeah.
That's good.
Very well.
I like going good. Good going. Well, cars. I owned a Saturn, people. That's all you need to know about me.
I don't know why they didn't release the hybrid Fit in the States yet. They're behind.
Do they have a hybrid one? It's called the Jazz in Europe, right?
Yeah, and they have a hybrid one.
Oh,
and
you can't sell Jazz in America.
And they're going to make
the problem.
They're making an electric one shortly. But the Prius C is out, which is like the Toyota Yaris, except a hybrid.
Yep.
Which is like a Fit, except not, and then a hybrid.
Yeah.
And so I had to look at that, but I just don't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to get...
Why don't you like it?
Better mileage.
Why don't you like it?
Does it get that much better mileage than the Fit?
I think it does. I mean, I'm expecting to get 30 in the Fit, but some people say I can get a lot more on the highway if I drive carefully. Uh-huh. And it looks like you should expect to get 50 in the Prius C.
Mm-hmm.
So like 30 to 50 is pretty big leap.
Pretty big.
It would pay for a few grand difference in a few years, but I like it less.
Oh, yeah.
It has less space. Likeable. It's shorter. It's uglier. The dash is messed up. It, like, interior is uglier too, not just the exterior.
Is the Prius C the one that has like the center column that like splits the passenger and the driver?
No,
it's just
because one of the new Prius. I think the new Prius, normal Prius.
You mean the V
has like a console that literally splits.
That's like the bigger like five passenger,
which is
Prius,
annoying.
Or, like, seven passengers.
It's weird.
Know. I'm okay with that.
No, I want more room. That feels claustrophobic or something.
The weird thing, the Fiesta in that class is fucking claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. That thing has no space at all.
That's a real small car, though. Like that's a
yeah. But the Fit is a really
could not
similar
have a Fiesta
size
in it.
Yeah. No. Except it just has it's way bigger inside.
Yeah,
they're just amazing like that.
Yeah.
Maximize
the
Prius C
volume.
Interior. The weird thing going on is that it's completely asymmetrical. It's got this like swooping pointy thing in the center at an angle. It's super weird. You got to look at pictures.
Well, I can just go to Ashley.
Also, it's
she has one. I just didn't look inside it. No. I didn't know
a
it was
C?
Weird.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, she got a Prius C.
Oh, cool.
Action Matt.
You just said cool, but you don't like that car.
Well, I like it.
I like other people to have it.
I like it less.
Okay.
Yeah, also, it's not fun to drive. It's like...
You're looking at the manual, right?
If I want to be responsible and old, then I, you know... I'm still... I mean, obviously...
You say that like it's a bad thing to be responsible.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes, my quote, irresponsible decision is to buy a Fit, which is still one of the most responsible things you can buy on the road.
Well, you but can get like... There's a Mugen Fit. You can get like the super hot-rodded...
Not here easily. Not unless you do a bunch of custom bullshit. They only sell a couple models here. They sell almost nothing here.
There's a Fit and a Fit Sport, and I thought that you could also buy like a Mugen Fit.
I don't think you get that
from
here.
Dealerships.
Okay, well, I'll look into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, manual. Yeah.
Cool.
All right, so real life stuff. Games. The only new thing I got to try this week was I got in the Guild Wars 2 beta, and this was one of the beta weekends.
So you've been looking forward to this game for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
I think a lot of people have.
I haven't, man. I've definitely had the up down slope of interest, and I'm definitely on a down slope right now. Like it's just been delayed long enough or taken too long to come out that I'm just like, all right, whatever. Eventually it'll come out and I'll play it then. So I haven't been super hyped about it for the last few months. But jumped in real briefly. It does some interesting things. I'd say probably one of the most interesting things it seems to do is most of the abilities are dual use, right? So I only played a very low level one class guardian, and they removed healers in general. There's no like dedicated healing class. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a method to self heal or to group support or whatever. So to some extent, in my understanding, is that. But this was the closest to healer maybe class there is, and so there's like weapon or equipped specific abilities. So if you're holding a shield, you start getting like tanky, like paladin abilities. And if you're holding an offhand, like, what do they call it? I forget what they call it, a scepter or a totem or something like that. Then you start getting magey, you know, run around DPS heal like abilities instead of tanky abilities. You know, one of your first abilities is this ground AoE 4-meter radius thing that does some damage if enemies are standing in it, but does some healing if you're standing in it. So that's dual use, right? And, you know, one of the buffs...
How would you not ever always be standing?
Is the AoE, like, away from you?
It's
usually
very small. Well, it's over there. I was casting it at my feet, but I had a checkbox for, like, simplified ground target. So maybe you could ground target somewhere else. But it's very small radius. So you either put it at your feet or the enemy's feet, or, you know, you try to get the enemy to run into it, or you just put it on yourself when you need healing. You know, do you use that right when you pull, or do you use it after you're low on health? It's not... It doesn't have obvious rotations, you know, because everything's kind of weird dual use. It seems interesting and difficult to become good at. It doesn't have this very obvious, you know, this is a good strategy. It's like, well, I have to just get better at timing things or something.
Yeah, you can't just look at the abilities, think about them for 10 minutes
and immediately and know the best way to use it. Right.
I would go 1, 4, 2, 3 and then
it's not a regular rotation, I don't think. You know, one of the first buffs you have, it does some extra fire damage or something on every fifth attack, or that's the passive bonus when you have the buff up, or the active use of that buff ability is the very next attack for you and all your allies does a lot of extra fire bonus, right? But when you use that, it takes the buff off for like 20 second cooldown or something. But it's the same ability. So you either get this like higher DPS over time consistent thing, or you get, you know, very short burst for the group. But then lower DPS for the next 20 seconds or whatever. I don't know. Weird stuff like that. Everything's dual use and hard to figure out exactly. So it's definitely going to be interesting. I like to try all the classes, you know, kind of like Diablo. Eventually you get to all the classes and eventually you realize that every class is pretty awesome. So I've been playing some more Diablo, playing a lot of Witch Doctor and talking about builds and stuff with friends that are playing it a lot. You know, several of the classes you can either kind of spec for close range combat or for ranged combat. You know, like the Witch Doctor, you know, you throw the spiders or you do the poison dart and then you're a very long range class, or you have this like, you know, shoot a spirit thing really far. But you can become a short range class by giving yourself a damage resist and shooting out these like very short exploding frogs that only go a few yards and stuff like that. It's pretty fun. Diablo's good. You guys will eventually play it, I know. Maybe when it comes to Xbox or something.
If they do that.
Yeah? You'll get it when it comes to Xbox?
I don't know. It there may be something new.
So you're just going to play... All right, well, then you'll play Torchlight.
Well, yeah, because you kind of bought it for me, so I probably will. Yeah, that's how that works.
All
right,
we're all going to play
that
Torchlight.
That was nice of you.
Yes, thank you.
Sure. It was in a 4-pack. You know, it's Steam. It does that to you sometimes.
Yeah.
That's about it. I mean, I played a little more Mass Effect 3 DLC, trying to unlock more of those characters. They have got their hooks in me. I have not unlocked everything yet.
Do they?
I keep playing. And I didn't have almost any time to follow all the E3 news, so you guys can tell me about all the E3 news that I missed.
Cool. I'll just jump in, and let's talk about that since you bring it up. That was going to be what I ended on, but yeah, let's talk about it. So E3, I went through a little cycle on E3, which was, I was hyped for it and interested in looking at all the stuff and having fun watching, you know, the press conferences and stuff. And then immediately after the press conferences happened, I was just pissed at everything and I thought it was all dumb and lame and stupid. And I was disappointed in gaming as a hobby and the people who are involved in it.
Wow, and then that's de-escalated
good.
Quickly.
It's a pretty good cycle.
And then now I am sort of like kind of ramping back up the other side and seeing that there was more that they didn't show. And basically I'm really disappointed in how they did the press conferences. And a lot of it I think might have to do with, I mean, basically it's they have to sell these games to a mass audience. And it just makes them have to focus on stuff that's really dumb and boring and not the cool parts.
Do the press conferences matter?
They get televised, which is why they end up mattering. So it's like it's on Spike TV. Yeah, like the whole Microsoft press conference, Sony press conference, all that stuff is on TV. And so instead of like...
On TV?
What do you
mean? Like what channel?
On television. Spike.
He said Spike.
Oh, I sorry, I didn't hear that.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, the Last of Us demo, the Lara Croft demo, the Watch Dogs demo, all are kind of cool next generation games. And all of them were just like... They all have something really interesting that I think they are going for, but in every single one of the demos that they showed as part of the press conferences and the big like E3 splash demo release, they were all just like violent gunplay. It's just so disappointing because I was so like Last of Us I've been looking forward to for a while. It looks like, you know, Eco meets the Road, right? I mean, it looks amazing. And yet the demo that they showed, you know, the whole point of that game, I thought, was like, you know, it's like The Road. Again, I've talked about this on other shows. You want to avoid combat, you know, fighting one, especially if like fighting two guys, you should be really scared of that. That should be something that you try to avoid at all costs. And the demo they showed is the guy going in and having this huge fucking firefight with a shotgun and Molotov cocktails against like 12 guys. And like, that's so not the game I was hoping that this would be.
So do you think it's just the video editor, the trailer editing?
Yeah,
do you actually think that game is not what you thought it was?
That's what I thought right after I watched it. And now having listened to some of the coverage later on, it turns out that people who saw that game, you know, in the behind closed doors demo, the developers played through that same section like three different ways, involving very little combat, involving actually no combat whatsoever. And so like I wanted, there are ways to approach the combat, and you know, you can do it with a complete lack of combat. Dishonored, it turns out, is the same way. You can do playthroughs that involve no death whatsoever.
And yet that trailer showed was like a guy basically knifing dudes in the neck for 3 minutes, right?
Exactly.
Fuck press conferences and TV, man. Stop putting too much weight into those.
I mean, that was the news that came out. And so, like, so they Ubisoft announced this game, Watch Dogs, which looks like... it looks really cool. It looks like basically like middle future. Yeah, like not near future, not 20 years from now, but like 60 years from now, you know what I mean?
Oh.
And then far futures, 300 years from now, Star Trek time frame, okay. Right? Like super espionage, Big Brother type world. The character that you play has you have like a cell phone that essentially gives you access to you're some like espionage agent. So whether it's the CIA or the NSA or whatever the agency that you're a part of, and the phone will give you, it gives you like head up display, but it's a third person game, but it gives you information on basically everyone you pass and everything you interact with in the world or just like walk by. So first of all, the game looks amazing. Like it looks totally next gen, like Xbox 720, PS4 kind of graphics. It was certainly running on some kind of high-end PC hardware. And so you walk by a person and a little display comes up of ostensibly information that's been culled from the world about that individual who you're walking past. So you'll walk just down the street and you'll pass somebody and it'll have like their picture like culled from their social network profile and their driver's license number and like tweets that they've written, right? And so you have basically all this information coming in, then you can make use of that. And the phone can do stuff like, you know, change traffic signals and unlock doors, and it's, you know, super spy espionage type stuff. Of course, at the end of that demo, it turns into a big, giant, open-world firefight when you crash four cars into each other and start blowing shit up. And I was like, fuck, I don't want that. I want this game to be, like, sneaky espionage, like, not killing people. I don't know.
I totally hear what... I hear where you're coming from, and it was interesting because I listened to this other podcast that completely blows called the Experience Points podcast that I keep listening to because I'm an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And they did like a, you know, they went and every day after E3, like they did day 0, 1, 2, and 3, and they did sort of, what did we see today and what did we think about it? And one of the guys on there had the exact same response to all these games, where like this sizzle reel idea where you've got to make this thing that looks action-packed, and a slow, methodical, you know, reel, highlight reel, is not going to appeal to as many people for some reason, or at least that's what they think, and so that's why they keep doing this. But he had the same reaction that you did, that he was just kind of like, ugh, it's every game is fucking about shooting dudes. Like, that's what everybody falls back on. Like, you can't think of what else to do. Well, let's give you cool ways to shoot dudes. And but I don't know, just to kind of play devil's advocate, because as much as I agree with you that it'd be cool if it wasn't just about shooting dudes all the time, I kind of think, you know, they both have their part in the game. And I think having the ability to be more stealthy and be Rambo is good. And it shouldn't necessarily just be stealthy. Like, there should be the ability to have firefights, because in the real world, you know, shit goes down, and sometimes you do have to...
Does it really, though?
You got to pull your...
What do you mean, in the real world?
Your 9mm, your Mac-10, or whatever the fuck the guns are that kids are using.
I don't think that actually happens in the real world.
And
you got to have a major
grenade, Molotov cocktail, nuclear explosion. That's just how it works.
Major firefights do not break out in the middle of Chicago in the real world.
Well, but they're exciting. They're exciting. Even if you think that you don't want it, you've played a lot of games where you have enjoyed that combat, and it is fun. It's not that it's not fun.
Are you telling me you've never been in the middle of a firefight?
Man, it's just never happened. I don't know.
Wow.
Charles smooth talks his way through every conflict.
God damn, you're sheltered,
ever.
Son.
See, Josh and I, we grew up
got
on the streets.
Got my 9mm with the dilly, yo.
We know what the GAT situation is in South Central City.
I get your point, Mike, but you know what games are fun? The games where you shoot dudes.
Yeah, shooting dudes, it's kind of fun.
It's kind of fun.
Like Space Invaders?
I was
if you weren't able to shoot those Space Invaders, that'd be annoying.
It's an easy crutch. It is an easy crutch. It's hard, like we were talking about escort missions, it's hard to make a game really good that doesn't have any violence or action or combat or anything.
But
you know?
I think there are games that have lots of really fun action that don't have shooting. Like Mike and I talk a
lot
about...
Yeah, like Burnout?
Sure, absolutely.
Has cars exploding?
No. Well, Mike and I talk about Mirror's Edge, right? The gunplay is the worst part about that game, but it has super sweet action sequences.
And I'm saying that's
quite
an accomplishment. It was difficult to make a unique game like
that.
That
is a rare game that succeeds in doing that.
Yeah, it has awesome, compelling, fun, visceral action that, when gunplay breaks out, totally grinds to a halt and sucks. So, anyway, I was particularly bummed about it in terms of The Last of Us, because I was really hoping for that game to be something different, and it turns out that
it
actually may
be. Yeah.
So that's cool. The other thing that was cool that came out of E3 was Smart Glass. Did you see that, Josh?
The Xbox
Smart Glass.
Yeah, this is interesting because... you know, the Wii U is potentially going to be the first console, I guess besides the 3DS, maybe, that has a built-in keyboard. Because the screen controller thing that comes with it has a touchscreen keyboard on it, right?
Yeah, so this console has a controller which not only has dual analog triggers, face buttons, and a D-pad, the complete center of the screen is like a 4 or 5 inch touchscreen display.
Right, and this is a very small point that it has a touchscreen keyboard built in that optionally, because obviously it does more than that. But the Xbox, you know, keyboard is an add-on option not many people bought. The PlayStation 3 keyboard thing is an add-on option not many people bought. Or you could plug a USB one in or something weird like that. Obviously PCs have them, but don't count as consoles. Maybe the 3DS or some shit like that you could use a stylus on. But anyway, this is the first one where, like, when you're playing online, you might actually be able to predictably expect that people could text you back and forth. Now, I'm not sure if Nintendo will utilize it to its fullest.
I'm pretty sure that they're vetting those messages. They're, like, checking them and, you know, scanning them for inappropriate content. Like, it's not just going to be free.
Oh, yeah. Did you hear about...
Unlike Xbox, where you can type whatever you want.
Did you hear about the as Miiverse? They have like, an MMO coming out. Every single image that you send and texted message that gets sent in Miiverse, this Nintendo MMO, will be vetted and moderated by a human being.
Wait, does that mean there's a delay?
Text message, yes.
There's a human.
They are paying people to sit in a room and read every single text,
dude,
that goes
the new gold farmer. That's what that is.
Wow.
Anyway, and make sure that it doesn't have objectionable content.
That's crazy.
In like every language that they that Nintendo exists
in. And there will be hundreds of them in cartons, sweltering in the heat.
Anyway, I mean, Xbox has been dominant for the for online gaming, but there is potential to dethrone them because they're not perfect. You know, you can't on an Xbox like be in a chat room of a multiplayer game, you know, assembling a team and just be talking back and forth like on a PC game where you're talking to the people in the lobby very easily because you all have keyboards, and not everybody wants to plug in their headset. Not everybody wants to talk and listen to insults, you know, like we talked about.
They much rather read them.
Right. Anyway, so the Xbox Glass thing where it's like you can run this app on your smartphone.
Yeah.
Your smartphone can then be your keyboard for the game, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
It won't be 100% coverage though, like the Wii U controller. But it does other things. I'm not sold on the fucking
pretty high coverage of people who own game consoles and have smartphones.
Maybe. Like,
that's got to be
A decent percentage of Xbox owners don't even put it online.
That's true.
And don't download games.
But those people would never be part of this conversation either.
Yeah, but it's a point.
They're like the Amish. They won't know that we're talking about this.
But I'm not sold on a lot of the other Xbox Glass uses. Like, looking up a map while you're watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You don't want to be doing anything while you're watching Game of Thrones. Yeah. You want to be paying the fuck attention.
Well, right. The first time you watch it, I totally agree with you. You don't want to be looking at anything else. But this is totally a director's cut special edition kind of feature where when you go through it the second time and you want to have the director's commentary, you want to have the map, you want to have the character profiles,
and that's just one use case.
It's,
right,
yeah,
like that, you can think of a million other ones.
Well, all a million other ones use that I can think of, I'm not sure I really want to do.
Well,
I haven't thought of ones that I really would
love to do, but I can think of ones that would be cool and it's free. So like, fuck yeah, like if I'm playing Forza and I can have the tack and the oil temp gauge showing up on my smartphone.
That
like,
would
that's
be
cool,
super rad.
You know? Or the one they always trot out is like, you're playing Madden and you can draw a hot route on your tablet or your phone, right? That isn't a predefined play in the game. Right?
If they implement the sweet ones, then I'm on board.
And it's basically...
But I'm worried that they're not going to implement many sweet ones.
So what I'm interested in is the fact that it's an open platform. I was watching that and going like, oh, that's cool, but it's just going to be for you know, Windows Phone. And then they're like, and this will be available on iPad and Android. And I was like, oh, shit, they're serious about it. And what that made me think is that Smart Glass is the same kind of Trojan horse entree into iOS and Android that iTunes was for Apple into Windows. Right. This is
a little optimistic, but I like it.
It's the same kind of, right? I'm not saying it'll necessarily be so successful, but there's no reason you couldn't necessarily start playing an Xbox Live game served off your Xbox through Smart Glass on your iPhone, right? Theoretically, they could do that. So it's kind of an interesting possibility. So
well,
yeah,
theoretically, PlayStation could make their Vita do everything that the Wii U does.
Yeah.
Except I don't have confidence that Sony is gonna, you know, make a lot of sweet games that do that. You know, there's too much of a barrier to entry, and they rely too much on third parties to do the cool stuff.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Neil Stephenson's Kickstarter. Did you guys see that?
Clang.
Which is a
great name for a game. I love that name.
I don't have to spend a lot of time, but he's doing a Kickstarter. He's a fan of Western martial arts, which is to say maces and axes and swords, right? He's doing like a fully like... simulation
authentic
quality
sword fighting
yes. Game
he's like, fuck all games up until including now that have been about sword fighting,
like to use a high-end motion controller, which will probably be the Move controller, I would assume, because that's the only one that has enough fidelity to really do it. So that's cool. I played this iOS game called Plague Inc. Have you heard of that game?
No.
I will just also throw it out there. I don't have to say much about it. It's a fun time waster. It's sort of like the that game Pandemic, the board game Pandemic. Do you ever play that?
I've heard, but I don't think.
Oh, okay. I thought you guys had played that with John.
No, it's one of the commonly referenced ones that we've never played.
So it's like that game in reverse. So that game, you're playing people who are trying to stop a pandemic. It's like a cooperative board game. You're trying to stop the pandemic. This one, you are the disease. And so you evolve yourself. You choose at the beginning what kind of disease you are, a bacteria or a virus or a prion, or right? And then you evolve to have different capabilities like resistance to cold or resistance to drugs or different transmission vectors like birds or fleas or bloodborne or air, right?
There are previous, I think they're online games called Pandemic and Pandemic 2 that you are the virus. You're basically trying to design the ultimate bacterial infection, mm-hmm. or let's see, or parasitic organism, or and you're trying to infect the world and you're trying to
kill everyone.
Yeah
That's what this game is. Yeah, so you're trying to
sunny game.
You're trying to kill everyone, but not you can't kill all your hosts. You have to keep enough of them alive to infect enough other people to stay alive. So it's kind of interesting. It's fun. It's not great. It's not amazingly great. It falls into this thing where it's kind of like it's turn-based in the background. You can't really tell when a turn starts or ends, but I'm pretty sure that's what's happening. It gets into this state where at the beginning you really can't do much because you don't have many options when you don't have... It gives you like DNA to spend on evolving your different traits, and you have like nothing, so you can't do anything, and you're just waiting.
What's the name of that?
Plague Incorporated, Plague Inc.
I wonder how much of a direct ripoff of Pandemic 2 it is.
I don't know. But then in the middle, you get a whole bunch and you're like, oh, I'm doing a shit ton of stuff. And then at the end, you just kind of sit around and wait and like see if you won or not. Yeah. So that part of it's kind of dumb, but it's also dollar and it's pretty good for that. It is a good week for gadget lust. Held and used the HTC One, which is a fucking sweet piece of hardware.
It's a good phone.
That phone is so amazing. It is the first phone where I was like, shit, I should go through and see what apps I have that I wouldn't be able to use on Android, because that is pretty sweet. And I'm up for
why is it thing. So hot?
It's white? Thinner than your Gene X. No, it's so what thinner. The version that I used is the Sprint version, which is the very ever so lyrically named HTC Evo 4G LTE.
The One X name. Is the new Evo?
Yeah.
I don't even know that.
Yeah.
Sprint, I hate this.
It's the worst name in the world.
That is a terrible
it's
name.
It's literally a collection of letters and numbers. HTC EVO 4G LTE is the name of the phone.
That's not the name of a phone. That's a collection of technologies.
Well, even the HTC names weren't that great.
One X is pretty good.
What was the other one besides? It's the whole One line.
It's One X and One S and HTC Evo 4G LTE. It's really terrible. Anyway, the phone is super hot. It is shit hot. The display is awesome and huge. It's really nicely thin. The Sprint one, and only the Sprint one, has like an integrated kickstand on the back. It's just nice. Just like really cool to hold. Super awesome. It made me have total gadget lust when I touched it.
Android's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Well, that one unfortunately is not stock ICS. It's got HTC.
Yeah.
What's their stuff. Sense? HTC Sense UI on it. But for all that, it looked pretty cool.
You can pretty much replace it though. You install a different launcher,
right?
And then who cares?
Yeah.
The only differences after that would be, maybe a couple things on the notification bar or a couple of their modifications to the control panel and stuff like that.
The fact that Drop 7 is on Android and probably a Tetris,
it's got to be a Tetris.
It has to be a Tetris. So yeah, that's cool. And also, of course, the new MacBook Pro. Okay. Oh wait, before I jump onto that, also on Android phones today, I linked to Mike, and I don't know if you saw it, Josh. Ubuntu for Android. Did you see that?
I did not watch your demo, but I saw somebody else run Ubuntu in 720p by plugging an HDMI cable into their phone and a keyboard or whatever.
So Ubuntu,
just using an external monitor.
Ubuntu for Android specifically only supports dual-core smartphones or multi-core smartphones, and it dedicates a core to running a separate operating system, but it runs them at the same time. So the phone is still running Android, and it's in a dock, and the dock has KVM. And you can run Ubuntu, desktop, full-on desktop Ubuntu on... So you take your phone, dock it at work, have Linux running, and use a full-featured, gigahertz speed, like totally capable Ubuntu, lightweight Ubuntu, and then pull it off, and it's still running Android, so you can still take a call like over your Bluetooth headset or headphones or whatever. That's the coolest fucking thing in the world. That's, I saw that, cool. I'm like, that's amazing. And since they're both up and running at the same time, they both have access to the file system and can therefore access the same contact list and the same documents and all that other shit. So
that's pretty neat. And I know that if that's not super functional and great now, then it will be real soon. Because when I demoed a buddy got a dock for his Bionic. Mm-hmm. It's one of the netbook docks.
Oh yeah,
you take the Bionic and
like the Atrix.
It's like the Atrix one. Just came out a little later. You stick your Bionic in it, and then it's like this netbook running this desktop OS. And the desktop OS, the phone's still running. It's still running Android in the background or whatever. But the desktop OS isn't exactly Android. It's not like Honeycomb. It's like this custom Motorola bullshit.
It's an app that installs on Android that runs when you... Yeah.
But then it runs your Android UI or whatever in a window, almost like a VM. And if you want it to go full screen, then you just make it go full screen. Mm-hmm. So it'll run all your Android stuff kind of like a maximized VM window. But when you're not in that, then it has these like the full desktop version of Firefox and a few other apps that Motorola programmed on there. But because it's proprietary, it's only as good as Motorola's coders. Mm-hmm. So you know that when, if Ubuntu runs well enough, then that's going to be a much better solution.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that's cool about Ubuntu is it's not like some crazy hack, right? It's literally Canonical are making Ubuntu for Android. So nice. Josh is showing me that there's a Tetris. Is it from EA, like official?
Yep, there's a free and a $3 one. So all I'm right. installing it. Nice. You
it's so,
only a matter of time.
I got more shit to talk about, but I'm going to skip it because we I'll talk about it next week. So two other things. I built a website. Go check it out. It's allmanualcars.com. It is every car on sale in the U.S. that has a stick shift and nothing else. What? It's just a list of that because that's a resource that I'm always wondering about and wishing existed, and it didn't, so I built it.
Oh, I didn't tell you. I test drove the automatic fit with the paddle shifters. Uh-huh. That thing's hilarious.
Yeah, is it terrible?
Oh, I don't know.
My car has that shit. My car
I don't
has
know.
The, like,
I think it's terrible.
My car's got manual. Paddle shifters, so I've never used them.
Yeah.
Really?
No, why?
Why wouldn't you?
Because it's bought an terrible. Automatic. Why would I buy an automatic
Did
if
you
I gave
say
a shit
yours
about that?
Has them?
It doesn't have paddles, but it has the one on the stick shift. It's just, it's a full-on straight-up manual transmission that you can sort of tell, like, I want you to think about moving down a gear if I push this
automatic.
Lever.
You said manual.
It's an automatic. Yeah. It's a manually activated automatic, but it is a torque converter automatic transmission, which is what 90% of them are. There are very few like high-end sports cars that have a manual that has an automatic mode, not the other way around.
Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I wanted. Yeah. It's a suggestion.
You get a Golf.
It's like, here, no, go into third. No, really. No, really.
Yeah.
It's kind of a suggestion.
It's a total suggestion.
It's a suggestion.
You can get a
really
Golf,
dumb that
and it switches back at some point,
I think. You can get a GTI with Volkswagen's DSG, and that's a real twin clutch manual transmission with paddle shifters and shit. Yeah. So anyway, go check out my website, which is a list of manual cars.
And what was the domain again?
It's allmanualcars.com.
Because, people can't rewind the podcast or anything.
Best manual no longer on sale, Honda S2000.
There you go. and then the last thing I want to talk about is another documentary. We're going to talk a lot about a documentary, which we just watched, the Indie Game, the movie. But I watched another one it's on Hulu. It's free on Hulu, although it's got the commercials. It's called Under African Skies, and this is a documentary about both about the making of Paul Simon's Graceland album, which he did in South Africa in the mid-80s, and his 25-year later return to South Africa and repeat performance of that album.
Yeah, man.
That's a great album. It's like a phenomenal. Back when they sold a thing called an album, and it was like a cohesive collection of songs, which we don't even think about music in those terms anymore.
I still do that.
I still do.
Yeah. I don't try to keep that alive.
I think I've still never bought a single in my life.
That's good on you, because that is not the main paradigm for people.
We are no longer
music.
The majority.
So that's a phenomenal album, and I did not realize anything that went along with that album. I just always listen to it. My parents listen to that music a lot, and you know, listen to it on, you know, car trips and just like in the house and whatever. And it turns out that album, like, he was apparently, Paul Simon was breaking the UN and the ANC, the African National Congress, cultural boycott by going there. So it was during apartheid in South Africa, when that regime was at its most aggressive and most violent, right? And just like most repressive against the black native population of South Africa. And the ANC was trying to, and the UN in collaboration were essentially trying, they had this cultural boycott where the whole don't play Johannesburg thing, right? Like the Specials wrote Free Nelson Mandela, but nobody would go and play it in South Africa because they wanted to delegitimize the regime in the same way that they had economic and military sanctions. They had like cultural sanctions in effect, right? And Paul Simon just sort of got enamored with the music that he was hearing like on tapes that were coming out of the country, and so just decided to go and just sort of in a kind of clandestine manner, without, not clandestine, I mean, he like flew there and he recorded an album with people and you know, with musicians that he just had heard and liked. And it was, the album is pretty much apolitical, but the action that he took was like intensely political. And so there's this really interesting dichotomy between, you know, art and musicians and the power of art to change. And like, you can totally see both sides of the argument, right? Like, he was just saying like, look, I wanted to go and be free. And, you know, I paid everybody like whatever, three times union scale. And, you know, all the artists got paid. They all got writer's credits where it was deserved. And anyone who looked at or listened to the music could see that this is like a synthesis of everybody's musical style, and a definitely a good thing for the anti-apartheid movement on an individual scale. And then you can also see the argument of the ANC and the UN saying like the people who you went and performed with are, you know, they are not free people. And we have a boycott. It's called that for a reason. We can't just, you know, letting one person go through doesn't necessarily mean that that's a good thing for everyone. Like, they have to go home to apartheid South Africa, and you got to fly back to New York, right? Just super fascinating. I didn't hear any of, I had never had any of that knowledge before.
I did not know that context, but the album is phenomenal.
Yeah. It has awesome. Like hit after hit after hit. Yeah. You Can Call Me Al, Boy in the Bubble, like, it's just so good.
Mike, Simon, Paul Simon?
Yeah, I know who Paul Simon is.
Yeah.
But I have not heard that album or knew anything about it.
Well, you've heard You Can Call Me Al, right? Probably
sounds vaguely familiar.
There's no way you haven't heard it.
Well, I didn't say I hadn't. I just...
You recognize it instantaneously.
I have not boned up on Paul Simon yet in my life, so...
Great album.
Okay.
Very interesting. Definitely, definitely worth watching that documentary.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, Mike, what's up?
So, yeah, I don't really have a lot to say. I'm going to talk about music for a while because that's all I've been doing, really. Except for playing, like, I don't know, another half an hour of, like, the Penny Arcade game, and the new Humble Indie Bundle came out, yes. And they added like Limbo and Super Meat Boy and Braid to it. So Charles was like, okay, I was maybe on the fence, but once they said that out, I bought it, and I was like, oh my god, you're right, and I bought it immediately.
Again, they added more games I already own. Like,
yeah, but you know what? The thing is, initially you think, oh, I don't want it. I already have these games. I've already played them, but I hadn't played Braid in a while, mm-hmm. and I'd never played it on a PC.
Yeah.
So it was actually worth owning it again.
Well, might as well get the Steam keys for everything.
And get the Steam keys for everything.
And now you have an excuse for me to tell you to go play Super Meat Boy.
Right. And I will probably play Super Meat Boy now. Like, well, more than the demo that I've played on.
They put
Xbox.
Meat Boy on there, and I'm like, all right,
well,
I'm buying this.
Especially after watching the documentary. Yeah, I'm super jazzed about all those games. So I started playing, Braid again for a few minutes, and, you know, it's amazing that we don't really need to go over that again. But I was spending some time on Bandcamp. Just a quick personal note, a quick self-promotion. All the music that I do, as far as official album-worthy stuff, since I do like albums, and I like the cohesive idea of a set of songs in a certain order at a certain time. So all the ones that I've made, I have about 7 of them up there on Bandcamp, although you can just get there at nebulae.com, N-E-B-Y-O-O-L-A-E.com. That's kind of my online everything. The two latest albums I put out, which were earlier this year, I had up for $5 each for like the first couple months, and then I went down to $2 each, and then today I actually went pay what you want. So now everything on there is pay what you want. So nice. I'm literally not selling anything of my music online for any amount of money unless you're generous.
Pure Yellow Color still costs money in iTunes.
Right, which is why I'm just talking about my stuff. Pure Yellow Color, different entity. Okay. That's on iTunes. None of my stuff is on iTunes. I'm probably never going to put my own solo stuff on iTunes. I don't know. Well, maybe I will. Who knows? But on Bandcamp, I found three artists that I'm kind of into right now. Actually, one of them came through Reddit, but they're all on Bandcamp. You can, I think all of their albums are also pay what you want, so you can get them for free, which is what I did. Noxious Foxes. Which just has a very
cute name,
except they probably don't sound anything like what their name sounds like. They're actually like a math rock band, if you would have thought that.
What would you think that the name would sound like? Because that name does not make me think of any particular musical
Violent
style.
Violent Femmes?
Really? Yeah, I was thinking more indie, like alternative college rock or something.
I could see that being anything from like underground hip hop to math rock.
But I did not think of math rock. That did not enter my head that, huh, what are what the Noxious Foxes sound like? And they're math rock, and they're hardcore math rock.
What's math rock?
So math rock, in general, it goes by a few other names, but that's the popular going. Generally, math rock is instrumental and usually composed of non-4-4 time signature stuff. Usually very complicated, takes very high-level ability of musicality, playing your instruments to play the music. You know, it's usually fast paced and kind of intense, which
like
their
camping.
Albums are, yes, much like camping, which I did this weekend, which was fun. And unfortunately, so they've got this one album called Legs with like an accent over the E, so I'm not sure how that changes the pronunciation of it. And then they have a remix album done by a few other artists that remixed a couple songs on that called Leggings, which I thought was kind of interesting. But yeah, the first song is just like, it's like 5 or 6 minutes of just intense, like, you know, 9-8 instrumental, like, you know, post math rock kind of just
post math rock.
Well, it's
Jesus wow, Christ. How did I not know
what
this
the fuck
genre
is that?
This sounds awesome.
It was super awesome. That first song, I was like, wow, because it's been a while since I've listened to a math rock band. And because, you know, it was just so different from what I'd been listening to recently, and it was like, whoa. Man, these guys are really good. Like, they're just playing these intricate beats like perfectly, and it's you know, even though it's an independent band, it sounds like a, you know, studio album, sounds just as good as like any, you know, like record label album that you would think of that's mm-hmm. well produced. And it was just like, wow, that was intense. That was really well done, and it was interesting, and it made your mind kind of work to kind of follow. You know, I find it very fun to follow a song that is not just in 4-4 and, you know, you have to, I like counting beats, and I like trying, especially if it's fast and you don't know what it's in, and you try to figure out, wait, like, okay, where's the loop point? Oh, now they're changing. Oh, now they've slowed down. Oh, man. And it just, your mind is working. You know, it's, I wouldn't say it's relaxing. You know, it's not music you listen to kind of chill out. It's music you listen to kind of engage your brain.
Yep.
Is this Super Killer song you're talking about, track one on Leggings?
That's the remix album.
The remixes
are a little less intense math rock, a little more 4-4, a little more electronica.
Oh, weak sauce.
Legs.
Okay, so it's all about legs.
Legs is all just guitar, bass, and drums.
And you're talking about Wherever Hugo Guido?
Sure. The thing that I was going to follow up this is that pretty much every song is like that. And by about like 2/3 of the way through the album, I was getting kind of tired. Like, it was too much. It was like
I'm really excited.
Ironically,
about this.
Like, their 10 million notes are hopes. Sort of one note.
Yeah, like that is the unfortunate fallout that I find in a math in at least this math rock band or this band that does that kind of music is it does.
It's kind of like listening to Steve Vai. It's like
it is.
Let me guess, you're gonna go off on like a 12-minute guitar solo now.
it's sort of like it's one of those things where like. I appreciate it very deeply and respect it for the musicality and the talent it takes to play something like that. But it has an obvious shelf life. Even within the first listening to it, I was like, harsh. Okay, I kind of know what this seventh song is probably going to sound like. It's going to sound a lot like the sixth song. Now, hold on a sec. That's not bashing math rock in general. I want to say it's mainly this band, I think, that's like that. Mm-hmm. They, at least on this album, there's no valley. Everything is a mountain, you know? And it's really hard to appreciate 9 straight songs of mountain with no valley to kind of like...
pacing.
Like breathe. Yeah, the pacing is just like... It's like 11, almost the entire time. So, I don't know. Yes,
is
Josh.
Battles math rock?
I would say Battles is kind of math rock, yes.
A little bit.
Yes.
They are in some of their songs.
They are much less intense. I would say these guys are way more intense than Battles. Which is why I think it's a little bit too much of a good thing.
So you need them on a playlist. Don't listen to their album.
Yeah,
all the
whole album is a bit much. So, but still, I would recommend them. That they're
Noxious
good.
Foxes.
Do you know
Noxious
Buke Foxes. And Gase?
Excuse me?
Buke and Gase.
Yes, I just heard them on NPR's, I think it was Radio
Please
Lab.
Say Planet Money podcast. Oh, yeah? Because that'd be amazing.
Was it a repeat or was it a new one?
Well... I don't know because I don't know them well enough to know what's a repeat. It was new to me.
They've been on NPR before.
It was a few weeks. No, it was a live show with them, the drummer from Wilco, and Reggie Watts.
Oh, yeah.
That whole show was brilliant, actually.
They're pretty awesome, right?
NPR.
They were pretty good, but when you're on the same stage as Reggie Watts, I don't know, they kind of paled in comparison because I love that guy. Speaking of which, Reggie Watts, if you don't know Reggie Watts, just fucking go on the internet and listen to some Reggie Watts. He's somewhat well known for his song "Fuck Shit Stack," which was my introduction to him. But my most recent favorite of his is the AV Club has a thing called Underground or Undercover, where they basically have artists come in and cover other artists' songs, and they have a huge list. And so the later you come into the fold, the fewer songs you have to choose from. So Reggie Watts did his cover of "Panama" by Van Halen. Which was just fucking brilliant. And I actually went so far as to listen to it multiple times, which I don't usually listen to a YouTube or online video multiple times, but I even recorded the audio in Audacity, and I'm going to clean it up and EQ it just so I can put it like on my iPhone because it was that interesting. Because who covers Van Halen, especially Reggie Watts?
Well, he didn't really cover it. Like, he did
his own. Oh, no. I think he covered it. He covered it well.
He did his own thing. he did an improvisational take.
He did a very literal improvisation of the concept of Panama.
He's more a comedian than a musician.
But
right?
He's a great musician. That's the thing. He can sing amazingly well. He can beatbox. He can improvise. You know, you might say that some of his music is
Shit Stack is actually the most songy thing he's ever done.
Yeah, like, yeah. It almost feels a little too overproduced now that I've heard other stuff by him. But anyway, two other bands that I found at Bandcamp, the Hoot Hoots. Now, this was a little more accessible. This is not math rock. I'd say this kind of like general alternative rock. But the interesting thing about them is how I came to them. Their album Appetite for Destruction, for Distraction. Yes, the Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction. Their Appetite for Distraction. The second song on that album is called Star Tropics. That's an old Nintendo game. I actually did a cover or a remix of it once, and I was looking to see if anybody else had ever covered Star Tropics because it's not a super popular game. And I found them, and they wrote a whole song about Star Tropics, and there are lyrics, and it references the game, and I'm like, what? You know. Like, and I've never heard of these guys, and I've never heard them talked about, and I read tons of gaming blogs and have for years, and yet these guys have never been mentioned. It's a great song. You should listen to the whole album. It's pretty good. One last one, Rebecca Brandt, Numbers and Shapes is...
I've heard that.
I
think so.
Because...
It sounds really familiar.
Because I think she's like, you know, this was like, it was on Reddit, this is... my friend's first album. You know, listen to it and, you know, give feedback or whatever. It's all instrumental, but it's more...
That's not what I'm thinking of then.
Yeah, it's more orchestral. So it's not just, you know, guitar, bass, and drums. You know, they're regular, you know, violin, flute, stuff like that. But it's really well done. I mean, once again, by, like, a veritable no one... has a studio quality. I mean, it makes me jealous because these people who are unknowns, and this is my first album ever, and it freaking sounds like they recorded it in a studio with, you know, a $10 million budget,
yeah.
Even though it probably was done in their house.
On Pro Tools.
Or Logic. Yeah. And I'm like, man, nothing that I've made even sounds close to the level of that quality.
Your stuff sounds good.
But...
What are you talking about?
No. If you listen to this and you listen to mine, like, it's different.
I don't have, like, an audio producer's ear, so I couldn't tell, but I think your shit sounds good.
Well, right. It sounds good, but it doesn't sound this good. And this is, like, her first album, quote-unquote, and I'm like, how the hell did you get that kind of sound and you've, like, apparently never done this before? I don't know. Anyway, those are all worth checking out. Yeah, I haven't really played many games. I did go camping. Camping was fun. I went out to... somewhere south of Julian, Green Valley Campground, went with some friends. We took our dog. My wife and I took our dog for the first time camping. Weren't really sure how that was going to go, but she did pretty well. She even did well with another dog there, who apparently had never been camping.
And Penny, your dog, was good as well? So yeah. So Robin did well and also Penny?
Yes, yes. Yes, I see what you did there.
Hi-yo!
Yeah, don't go camping very often, maybe once a year, but it's fun every once in a while. It's always kind of a... It's different, you know. It basically, it's not the comforts of home, so it makes coming home seem that much better. You kind of remember why we don't live in the wilderness and live out of tents and cook all of our stuff on a small little grill thing on a table.
You needed a reminder?
You know, occasionally it helps.
It's been a year since you
remind yourself what it's like.
You just camped like a year ago.
Yeah, but that's once a year. That's not a lot of time to be camping. I mean, other people camp like every weekend or something.
I love camping.
And I don't
get to go.
And one more thing I just want you guys to remember, YOLO. All right. YOLO. No, not you only live once. You obviously like owls. My wife, I came home today and she had a t-shirt for me. I hadn't gotten a new funny t-shirt in a while, so she bought me the YOLO shirt, which has a bunch of owls on it.
I was wondering if that was a reference to something other than a funny shirt.
Well, no.
You don't know YOLO?
You don't know YOLO?
Oh, YOLO is...
It's the hashtag of the last month online. Everybody, all the kids are saying YOLO.
Okay.
But it's quickly progressed into the like, oh my God, I can't believe you're saying that. You're such a poser. No one says that. Who's cool? You're an idiot. Don't say that. But
it's like the stereotypical 14-year-old girl on Facebook, like spending too much money at the mall, could say YOLO.
Yeah.
Or the guy looking up to, you know, the white guy who wants to be a hardcore rapper, like, you know, trying to, what do you call it when you open your door on the road and you like
ghost ride the whip.
Yeah, or ghost riding your whip. And he's like, dude, YOLO.
All these people.
I love the ghostwriting scene in the FP. That's so good.
Oh my God, we want to go watch the FP again.
Dude, it comes out next week.
Yes.
It's shipping to my house next
week.
Can
we do another movie?
I'm planning a party. Yes. Like, yes. I'm giving my son to a grandparent, and we're watching the fuck out of it.
Permanently.
The FP.
All you're going to do for the rest of your life is watch it on repeat.
I am so psyched about
this
shit.
But it's Sunday.
No, man, it's a weekend.
Yes, I am interested in seeing that. So we're going to see the FP later. But
YOLO, you like owls?
Yes, you obviously like owls. That's what YOLO means. Who knew all these teenagers were just talking about owls? But speaking of movies that we will have had watched.
We can have been having had this discussion.
Indie Game, the movie. Oh, it was so sweet.
Yeah, we just watched this movie.
Today's release day.
Yeah.
We like downloaded it on Steam.
Oh, wait. I want to tell the story. No, shut up.
Watch it on Steam. Steam Odyssey.
Okay, so I was an idiot and I didn't realize that my MacBook Pro, which has Steam on it, which
I
used to
download.
Oh, I
never talked about the new MacBook. The new MacBook is sweet.
It's got a lot of pixels.
Yeah, the MacBook with Retina display, good price.
Very
doable.
Quick. The coolest.
I would buy it if I didn't already have one.
Two coolest things about it. I loved the shot of like Final Cut where.
The 1080p video running.
It shows
a
video
of the screen.
Up at the top of the right hand side, the video that you're editing, and on the left it has a bunch of tools, and across the bottom it has the timeline, right? The I guess they just call it a timeline. I don't know what the actual term for that
timeline. Is. Timeline.
Whatever. Yeah. The timeline where you can do your cuts and edits and whatever. And they said that video in the top right of the screen is not compressed. That is pixel for pixel 1080p. There are 3 million pixels left over on the screen when you're displaying 1080p in the corner. I was like, that's fucking dope. And then the other thing that's sweet is just an engineering detail. The fans have asymmetrical blade placement. Did you see that?
Yeah.
So that instead of creating one spike of frequencies that you hear and perceive as loud, it creates many frequencies which are at the same decibel, but you perceive as being quieter. So it's like such a cool engineering little trick. I'm sure that's patented to shit, otherwise they would never have talked about it, but that's just a great idea. I was really psyched about that when I heard that.
That sounds neat.
I love that kind of detail.
What's the PPI?
It's 220. It's 220, so it's well below the 300.
Didn't they? Weren't they trying to get over 300?
No, I mean, the new iPad's not, is like 280 or something, and the iPhone is 320.
Oh, but they're still calling these Retina?
It's just branding. Quote-unquote Retina display.
So the MacBook is still a Retina display?
They're branding it as such.
Oh my God.
And it supposedly looks amazing, but I mean, I guess technically they could make the argument that you use that at a distance further than whatever the 12-inch 300 limit is, because it gets... I don't know. Maybe there's some reason why they can still call it that.
I think that's but generally
just,
why they call
branding.
It.
It's just branding. It's just like...
It's blast processing. Super,
it has... That's a higher resolution than the 30-inch Apple Cinema display. That's dope as hell. It's four 13-inch MacBook Air screens.
I don't know.
15-inch.
I don't know. All I'm thinking is that it's going to run games like shit.
It sure is.
You're going to have to downscale them, and then they're going to run it a non-native res. But the upside is that there's so 10. Many pixels that... Even when it runs at a non-native res, if you get the exact correct non-native res, then it might look native again.
It's 16 by 10.
Yeah.
So any 16 by 10 should theoretically
not
look
any,
okay.
But it several of them should look very good. Yeah.
Well, so it's 2880 by 1800, so that's twice 1440 by 900, so you could run it at that and
that's
it would look
That's what I'm saying.
Good.
If you did exactly half, it would probably look real good.
Which is actually one quarter of the pixels. Okay, so sorry about that. MacBook Air looks sweet. MacBook Pro.
So Indie Game, the movie.
Indie Game, the movie, yes. Tell us the saga of your MacBook.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, just real short. I downloaded it on my MacBook, which has Steam, and then realized that I had no way to actually show that on a larger screen like my TV, which only takes HDMI and VGA. And yes, they make a mini display port to VGA adapter, but I don't have it. I only have one to DVI, which is plugged into my 22-inch LCD monitor. So... instead, we rented it on an Apple TV for $4.99 and watched it in HD, and it streamed the whole thing and never chugged once and looked beautiful. And I don't know, I think that experience, except for the fact that we didn't have like a sound system, we're just listening to it on a TV. Otherwise, I think it was...
But the Apple TV has
a pretty good experience.
Digital audio out or something.
Well, right? I know, but it's just going to a TV. I mean, I don't.
Yeah,
have
I know,
speakers.
But like it has a capability.
Right? No, though. It could.
Yeah. It's a movie.
That's my fault.
That we watched via a method.
Yes.
I just felt dumb paying money to download it on Steam and then not actually watching that. But
I feel good about giving them money.
But I did.
It's
I gave them
movie.
Money because
you
it's
gave
a good
money
movie
twice.
And it was worth twice that. So yeah, Indie Game the movie, guys. I've been waiting to watch this. You know this. Much like the games that they talk about in the movie, I feel has been in development for a few years. Mm-hmm. And but I think
it was like one of the first Kickstarters, right? It was like the first time I ever...
It's got to be a pretty old one.
It was the first time I ever really heard about Kickstarter as a thing.
Yeah. And I think it, I mean, it paid off. I mean, it looked beautiful.
It was well edited. Good cinematography.
Well edited. They got the guy who did the soundtrack, Jim Guthrie, to Sword and Sorcery to do the soundtrack.
Yeah, good music.
That was good.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the one thing that I came away from it was, if I ever thought I wanted to be like an indie game developer, that movie drove that ambition right the fuck out of me. Because, I mean, like... These guys are obviously really good programmers, and I know I'm not that good of a programmer, but, you know, I didn't realize to the extent that the movie showed how...
kind of soul-tearing.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's like you kind of know that these guys are like, man, they must do nothing but eat, sleep, and breathe their game, but when you actually see them and hear them talk about it, and you see them, like, almost, you know, like, break down, and you know, obviously, I know you guys... the scene with Phil Fish, the designer and creator of Fez, where he's basically talking about like what happens if this game doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, I will kill myself. And he says it with the conviction of someone who has been doing nothing but working on a game for like 3.5 years and probably, I don't know to what percentage, maybe 49% minimum believed that statement. And it was kind of chilling to me. I mean, not that I really thought he would do it, but that he had enough conviction at that moment to make me believe that maybe he would.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
A good indicator of how intense all those guys are is that Jonathan Blow was the most chill among them.
That guy is like
by leagues.
Yeah.
Operator. He's like the guru. He's like the auteur guru. And Phil Fish is like, you know, he's having a baby.
Like bundle of
this is a 5-year pregnancy.
Yeah.
And then the Super Meat Boy guys are just like those cool tattooed guys you knew in high school who were spent all their time making games and now actually like came
watching
through.
Like little 1 or 2 man teams being put through the ringer, putting themselves through the ringer for fucking years, literally years, to push a game like this out and kind of give birth to it, right? Mm-hmm. Gives you a sense of what kind of a crazy achievement it actually is for, say, like Ubisoft to make Assassin's Creed Brotherhood and put it out the holiday season after Assassin's Creed 2, right? Like, that's a crazy fucking accomplishment, and it gives you a sense why they need like 500 guys and 6 studios, like all working on these little tiny slivers. Or, you know, we got the guys in Shanghai to make all the boxes and trees, you know, like they have to like cut it up like that because it'll take you 5 years to put a game out.
It's unbelievable. The fans are entitled as hell.
Unbelievably so.
Oh my
yeah.
God. Complaining yeah. about stuff getting delayed. And, you know, I do it in jest. Like, I complain Last Guardian's been delayed a million times, but, you know, I want them to take as much time as possible.
Absolutely.
It's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
It's like, you know, I it's like, it's sort of, it feels like a byproduct of how many, you know, games have become more popular and thus more games are coming out. It seems like there's more platforms. And so it seems like, and I know I've expressed this before, that like every week it seems like there's 20 new games that are coming out that I now have to like fight for my attention. And I just can't, like, I feel overwhelmed that there are so many games. And so when I go on the internet, a message board, or watch this movie, and I see these forum posts by these incredibly fucking entitled people saying like, oh my God, you're taking too long making your game.
I hate you.
Seriously.
Yeah.
As if, you know, they can't all be trolls. You know, I know a lot of them probably are, but some of them are actually people who actually feel entitled. Like, why aren't you done with this game that you're making, you know, because you're an awesome person. And, you know, it's
weird that
I don't understand that mindset at all. It's the weirdest thing.
You know what it is? You know how they say like the political spectrum isn't really a spectrum? It's not something that goes from left to right. It's actually a circle. Mm-hmm. And that being a moderate is actually farther away. Being a moderate is to be 180 degrees from the extreme left and extreme right. And those two are actually quite close together. That's true for religion. It's true for politics. It's also true for this, right? It's like people have such a love and desire and sort of almost need to play this thing that they have been following for so long that it can jump over to hating the person who's like, quote unquote, stopping you from having it, who is also the only person who could ever mean that you get to have it. It's like that person, the author of this game that I want so badly, has so much power over me that I like love and hate him at the same time. And, you know, maybe I even hate him a little more than I love him.
Well, yeah, because they say that the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the moderate. The moderates are like, it'll come out when it comes out. Right. And the other side is like the people who are like, I love you so much, like, this game is going to be awesome. And also, why isn't this game out? I hate you. You know, those are like the same people. They're like in the same pod.
Yeah, I'm not sure I believe that.
No?
I have no feelings, particular feelings on that.
Okay, good.
Good one.
I like where you went with that. So, I never really, I didn't play a lot of Super Meat Boy. You know, I played all the way through Braid. One of the interesting things that I thought the movie was going to have more of was more John Blow.
Mm-hmm. I always want more John Blow.
Yeah, like, there needs to be more Blow in that game. There was
more Blow, John.
A paucity of Blow. But, you know, because I feel like he's a really interesting guy. He has a really interesting story. but it seemed, because he was like so smooth and so like, you know, he did talk about how he sort of went into a depression 3 or 4 months after Braid came out because of all of the people basically not getting his entire vision.
That was very interesting.
It was so very interesting. And but I wanted the level of like detail and emotion that they got in with the Super Meat Boy guy and the guys and the Fez guy. But they didn't.
They had games coming out. So they had a story arc that the movie was able to tell.
Yeah.
He's more
retrospective. He's reflecting on it. I know. But I was still disappointed because I really wanted more of his story. He seemed so interesting.
The
thing that he said that was really interesting. I'm going to let you finish. But John Blow was one of the best presenters of this movie of all time.
Also, you know, Josh wanted to say that he wanted more Blow again. Yes. I know.
What you brought up, Jonathan Blow said that some of the hardest things for him to read when Braid came out were positive reviews, because they were at the same time both glowingly positive and really only, from his perspective as a developer, only touching, sort of glancing off the surface and really not sort of getting or fully understanding or appreciating what he was trying to do or say with this work of art. I thought that was a fascinating insight. I'd never thought about it that way.
I can never get enough Blow. Did you guys read the article recently about him with regards to retreats? Like programming?
Depth Jam?
Depth Jam is what it was called. Yeah. That thing was riveting, man. Did you read the whole thing?
Mm-hmm. No, I did not, but I did. It is great.
Yeah. He talks about in detail this, this four programmer. Indie game programmer retreat where they iterate and give each other feedback on their games that they're working on, and
in contrast to
all other types of jams,
all other game jams and development jams,
right?
In contrast to the whole hackathon, or
conferences, etc. Any type of
the kind of hackathon, like everybody gets together and we try to produce something in, or like, as a collective, we try to produce like 30 games in 2 days.
Yeah, but I mean, he also compares it to like GDC, which is not really a game-a-thon or anything.
Right.
Yeah. It's just supposed to be this educational event for game programmers or whatever. So it's kind of like that. It's like this educational event that's the most productive for advanced, developers in the middle of a game like him and a few guys that... making some other games that look totally sick, like I don't know how to pronounce it, but Migyakur. I'm really looking forward to that one, and I have been for fucking years. That's one of those ones that's been on the list for 3 years.
Starting to hate that guy.
Why isn't it out yet? God, he's a dick.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about something like that is that, just to play devil's advocate, it takes, I guess, quite a bit of confidence, to go to something like that and open your code up to that, because I almost felt like I really identified with Phil Fish. Not that I wanted to identify with him, but I couldn't help but feeling, because when he was at PAX and he was showing off Fez for the first time, like with a real demo, and it kept failing and he had to restart the box, and, he was, you could feel the like tension mounting in him, and just like he's just feeling let down. He's really nervous going into it because of the whole legal issue with his former partner and whether he was going to get sued for even showing it. And then it was failing at the beginning, and, just feeling like everything's crumbling. And then later, when he talks about that Destructoid article which I still don't understand, like that technical snafu where it said it had 11,000 Facebook likes, and then he looked at it later and that was like,
I think what a that typo meant was,
or something.
No, I think what that meant was that the article had gotten 11,000 Facebook likes, but his video had not. That the Destructoid article had a bunch of likes, but his game didn't. Hmm. Like the actual video that was playing in the page didn't get credited for those likes or whatever.
Well, still, that feeling that you think everybody is liking you in a way, and then you find out that they weren't, and it's like he's putting so much of himself into the game, and then putting so much of himself out there and saying, "Hey, this is my creation. This is my baby. This is the thing I've been doing nothing but." And then like, man, it's so much to put out on the line. I don't even know if I could do, even get, you know, a quarter of the way. It takes, I feel like it takes so much guts, not just the ability to do something like that, but the guts to put yourself out there in such a way to put yourself up to the scrutiny of not only regular people, but at a depth jam kind of thing like that to other high level programmers. I don't know. I've just, in the creative stuff that I've done, I've never, except when I'm jamming, like when I'm playing improvisational music with somebody else, I don't do a lot of collaboration. I don't necessarily like work with other people on things because I do have this like strong anxiety, self-confidence issue of like, I don't really want to let everybody know about this thing until I'm done.
Yeah.
And so putting something out there when I know it's not done, like I'm already feeling defensive about it. And then I'm still, okay, well, I got to show you what I have. There's this like intense, like cringing feeling, like, I know there's bugs. I know there's issues. And now everybody's going to see it and they're going to find me out. And
it's interesting because I would feel freed by that. Like personally, I feel the most anxiety when I think something's finished and I show it to people. If I show it to people, because like at that point, if there's something that if they find a fault with it, like that's 100% me. Early on in the process, I can say, oh yeah, well, it's still early. I'm going to iron out bugs. Like at that point, I feel like the pressure's off. It's like it's once I say it's done that I feel that kind of pressure.
Yeah, I feel pressure on both of them, but it's
you're like, yeah, I fucking feel that all the time.
I feel pressure about everything I do at any stage of production, but just when, just, you know, it's crossing that threshold from this is my idea to now I'm sharing this idea with people.
Yeah.
Crossing that threshold, whether it's at 50% or 100%, is really, it's filled with anxiety. So I guess I can totally identify with Fish in that part of the movie where he's like, okay, shit, no one's really seen this for a while. And then everything is breaking. It's sort of like listening to a song I made and then hearing like all the missed notes or the guitar string noise or like, oh, the production value, that's not so great. I should have done better on that and been like, fuck, why am I doing this? You know, I should never make games again. I should do something else. You know, I should work on cars. I should do nothing. I'm done.
I should work on cars.
Yeah, except I shouldn't because I don't care about cars.
I identify with those guys a lot because you know, my entire feeling of self-worth is directly related to how many listeners of our podcast we have.
You must be feeling pretty shitty then.
Josh is going to kill himself, people. So what?
One Suicide thing, is funny.
One thing I really liked was that I don't think anybody could watch that movie and still hold the opinion that games aren't art. Like,
ooh,
I really don't think that you can.
Oh, let's get Ebert's review on this movie, right?
Oh, man.
So I'm sure everyone said that already.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Ebert has a specific definition of art that he defends with that standpoint, which is basically around
you would have to
in order to
defend.
Yeah, he's, like as soon as you give interactivity to someone,
his then it statement ceases is being art. If it has interactivity, then it's not art. And like that's just a way that he defines art, and so you can't really argue with that. It's like whatever, okay, that's what you chose to define art as, something that does not have any degree of interactivity. Okay, fine, like you can be right about that, but it's such a random, narrow definition of art. It's kind of easy to dismiss. But I just think that you watch that movie and you see exactly the same kind of passions that. You know, kind of these tortured artists throughout history, regardless of medium, have exhibited.
Yeah, these are tortured artists. They
totally, they are
incredible. Oh man,
especially like that same kind of like
Johnny was his name or Tommy.
Tommy,
yeah. The programmer on Super Meat Boy. Oh man, that guy. You know, I was feeling for him. He's just like, you know, this is all they have. You know, he's like eating at a Waffle House alone, and that picture. I don't know if you've ever ate alone at a Waffle House, but Jesus, man, that was
it. What are you trying to say about me and my Friday night Waffle House visits?
Which we don't have in California, but okay.
Yeah, you totally got like a Van Gogh.
You drive to the Midwest to go to the Waffle House by yourself in your time of trouble. I don't think we have Waffle Houses in California. I think that's a Midwest.
We have Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles.
We have equivalents.
That's true. Okay, yeah. A Denny's. You go and stay in a Denny's or something.
Anyway, I got a total Van Gogh kind of like tortured artist vibe off those guys big time. It's just the creative process.
Yeah. Do you feel any different about the games after seeing their creators in this light? Does it affect your opinion of the game at all?
I don't really have a different vision. I thought it was interesting that Fish said a number of times that he was trying to create a peaceful place with Fez. Mm-hmm.
I think a pleasant that place note, to hang out
a
in.
A pleasant, yeah. peaceful, fresh
but
air.
But that's what I got of. From the game, so I feel like he did it.
That's the vibe that I felt...
At the beginning.
At the beginning.
And that's the part that he wanted to... that he was focusing on for yeah. one point in time. I mean, obviously the game's layered and deep enough that it has a lot more than can be encompassed in a single sentence. And so I think that was like his... like marketing speak, especially like 2 years ago, mm-hmm. like that's what he wanted to get across. And that's definitely what does come across in your first little bit in the game. I mean, it's obviously entertaining on many other levels,
yeah,
but it's a little harder to get that across while, you know, giving people a short demo or explanation.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you would agree it's entertaining on the other levels too.
Sure. No, absolutely. Yeah, I was just really interested that was sort of at the forefront of his mind, whether that was at that certain time or that was just sort of his like his talking point.
Well, he made it for like 5 years or yeah. something. So each aspect of it probably had to be totally in the forefront of his mind for, you know, a year at a time at least.
Yeah.
Right.
And apparently he completely rewrote the game like 3 different times. And
yeah.
It's
yeah.
kind of ironic the hell he went through to make a pleasant game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
Good movie.
You know, I just wanted to mention another movie that it reminds me of is Reformat the Planet, which is a documentary yes. not done by the people who did this. It's done by Two Player Productions, who does all the Penny Arcade TV stuff. Which was basically about the...
They did the first season of Penny Arcade, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
They did... it was basically a chiptune documentary, like how the chiptune scene started in yeah. New York, and with BitShifter, he was one of the main initial guys, and how that has become like a revival of... You know, to me, it's sort of like the classic rock of our generation, because that was the kind of music that a lot of us grew up listening to in the video games we played, and it's... I feel like it's born out of that, but similar editing and mood and style. And even if you're not interested in that kind of topic, I think it was so well done that it was worth watching anyway. So
cool. Reminds me of Nerdcore Rising also.
Except that's not
pretty
that
good.
Good. I didn't like it at all.
It's not fabulous.
Is that just about as good Nerdcore? As,
like, yeah.
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 Yeah, you know, I'm not really into Nerdcore that
it's
much.
It's pretty interesting though.
I don't, yeah, I might watch it because of that, but. You'd think I'd be into that or something, but I'm not. I don't know.
I find that guy pretty irritating, the MC Front a lot.
Yeah.
MC Front a lot. He's
yeah. Yeah, but lots of times irritating
fun to watch or...
irritating leads of documentaries often make a really entertaining documentary.
Yeah. Yeah, so I watched part of that and couldn't get through it. Yeah. Cuz that guy's annoying.
A little bit.
Cool.
All right, good game.
You just got escorted. Movie. The escort mission goes to the movies. We're going to do another one of these shows around the FP, and I can't wait for that.
Oh, man. The FP.
In the meantime, visit us at theescortmission.com. Please, please, please click through our Amazon link, because that is super helpful. If you're going to buy something on Amazon, click through the link. Potentially, you might be able to... Can they buy this movie on Amazon?
I don't know how they're distributing it.
Is Indie Game the Movie available on there? Maybe, maybe not.
I think it might be through Amazon and iTunes and their website and Steam.
You can see with it we do no research,
whatever. If it is, we
will
link it.
Yeah. If it's possible to do that, we will link it in the show notes. If not, and you're going to buy something on Amazon, doesn't cost you anymore, and it can help us out if you click through our link before you do so.
And send us email at mail@theescortmission.com.
Yeah.
You know, your thoughts on if you saw Indie Game the Movie. Or any of the stuff we've talked about, or you just want to say hello.
Or if you just want to hear Mike and Charles do that mailbag song again.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, right? Stuff. We're holding it, but we're not doing it right now.
No, because
not
we don't
if
have
there's
any,
no mail.
We didn't get any mail this week.
See, if you want to hear that awesome jingle that we made up again, send us some email. Do it.
Good night, people.
Lates.
All right, thanks.